Happy Monday! The Fantasy Baseball Today podcast is back, and why am I excited? Because Scott White is back too. Scott, it's so good to have you back.
Are you really excited that I'm here, Heath?
Yes, I am. I had to do an entire
podcast. He's so excited that he sent 1,000 emails about it.
1,000. I guess we'll just jump right into that, because Adam Azer is not back. He is not here to face the music. From what I saw these tweets coming in, was the way I learned about it. Because I didn't get any of the emails, because I apparently have a better spam filter than most of you.
I was out at a bar on Saturday
That's
night.
Shocking.
And don't... you're casting stones. I was out at a bar on Saturday night, having some beers, and my phone keeps going off. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And I finally just, like, on the Gmail app, for future reference, on the Gmail app, there are three little dots at the top right. You just hit that, mute conversation, and you're good.
Okay.
So basically, what happened? I mean, did we explain what actually happened
here? We're not explaining what happened.
To people who aren't in the bracket tournament?
Apparently, what happened, from my best understanding, is that our bracket system has a really cool feature for you and your friends to talk trash on the message board. When there are 1,500 people in the contest and somebody starts spamming the bracket board, the message board, it's not as fun.
Well, somebody asked who wants to join a fantasy league, and you know, it being a bracket pool with a bunch of fantasy baseball listeners, pretty much everybody did.
Yeah.
So everybody responded, and we all got to see it, and you know. Most people weren't very happy about that. There were a lot of comments like, please take me off this list. Like, sure. That's something we have the power to do.
Yeah, just make
and,
a conversation.
Just stop talking.
Marketing spam?
By asking to remove you from the list, you're only
contributing.
Which I think actually
like
somebody else pointed out.
It's like when people in a crowded theater start shushing. Mm-hmm. That's so much more annoying than the people who are actually talking.
But you know what I learned from this is there is nothing that enrages people more than unwanted email. And look, I've been there. I've gotten spam that I didn't understand in my inbox. But the concern is more, I don't know where this is coming from and how to stop it than just,
Scott, it's
there's
not,
a lot of emails.
He's not a real Nigerian prince.
We have got to find some way to make up for this, though. And Adam's not here to make up for it and apologize. Hashtag blame Adam. So the best thing I could think of is we're going to play the feud.
Oh,
everybody loves the feud.
Everybody
we
loves
don't
the feud.
Do it often enough, and I like doing it when I don't have to guess and look stupid.
Our very own Steve Harvey.
Do 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 do. That's the right music, right?
Da, da,
yes.
da, da. I can't sing very
Scott's
well. Sorry, still getting over it.
I am so.
I love the feud, man.
We've got three rounds, so that we can determine a winner. We may not even need the third round.
I definitely won't.
Bang the table if you want to respond. That's the way that it works. We all know that.
Sure.
There were four 2020 guys from last year that are not being drafted in the first two rounds this year. Everybody understand the question? Four 2020 guys from last year that are not being drafted in the first two rounds this year. Scott White buzzes in.
Yes, Ian Desmond.
Ian Desmond is one of them. Pass or play?
I'll play.
Okay.
Don't type anything onto your computer, Chris. This is not time to go browsing.
Ian Desmond was a 2020 guy in 2016.
Jeez.
Scott
yes.
White, who is your second guess?
Will Myers.
Will Myers is correct. There are only two left.
And that's when I run out of guesses. And that's when I make for bad listening.
Yes.
So I will have to come up with a name here very quickly.
Yep.
And the
quicker
name
than this, please.
I'm going to go with is...
Like, are you just going to quit? Or come on.
Paul Goldschmidt. No,
Paul Goldschmidt is being drafted in the first two rounds.
Just inside the first two rounds,
yes,
Paul Goldschmidt.
All right, so that's a guess. And it
he
buys
doesn't
me,
get three strikes.
It buys me time to think of another guess.
He gets two strikes.
Come
we
on.
We don't got time for all this.
Well, I mean, if he can have three strikes, if he doesn't take 30 minutes to use them...
I am going to go with Ryan Braun.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Ryan Braun did not have 20 stolen bases last year.
I should not have played.
Yeah, you should have passed for sure.
This is always what happens.
Yes.
And, my final guess will be,
This is awesome, Scott. Come on.
Nobody
good.
This
is not making up for the email thing.
Xander Bogaerts. It's
Xander
wrong,
Xander Bogaerts is incorrect as well. There are two answers on the board, Chris, for the steal.
There's someone you told me recently, and I should know this.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Well, there's one that you guys are just completely failures in life for not guessing. And then there's one
that's surprising one.
The tricky answer.
Yeah.
Jonathan Villar?
Jonathan Villar only had 19 home runs in 2016.
Oh, Scott, but now I know who the other one is.
Gene Segura was a 2020 guy.
Yeah.
And then a guy that we don't ever talk about, Melvin Upton. Had 20 home runs, 27 stolen bases, and 539 plate appearances. There is certainly a path to playing time for Upton in the Jays' outfield this season.
There is. I would guess he probably plays mostly against left-handers and doesn't get quite enough playing time to reach those lofty totals again.
He is, but we would have thought that like his situation looked worse going into last year than it does now.
With the Padres, I don't know. Most of that damage was with the Padres, right?
Yes.
I feel like it was.
He is going safely outside of the first two rounds. 53 overall.
He's outside of the top 300.
But look, I mean, late round steal sources, just for that, I think he probably needs to be in the discussion. I don't see him. They don't have enough options to like just completely dismiss him as an everyday player. Right. I just don't know that he's good enough to hold down that
job.
Well,
guys he's going to be fighting for playing time against Ezekiel Carrera, Steve Pierce,
Pompey.
Dalton Pompey. Not household names here.
No.
So anyway, let's move on to round two. Scott leads 1-0.
Sure.
Chris, you've got to make a move. There were five pitchers in the American League last year with more than 200 strikeouts. Five pitchers with more than 200 strikeouts. Chris Towers is in.
David Price.
David Price is correct. Would you like to pass or play?
I will definitely pass because I'm
you
smart.
You will definitely pass. Scott White, guess quicker.
Chris Sale.
Chris Sale is correct.
Justin Verlander.
Justin Verlander is correct. Two answers left on the board.
Corey Kluber.
Corey Kluber is correct. Going for the sweep.
You know, I'm not sure.
This
I'm not
is where,
sure.
Yep, this is kind of the
this
purpose
is
of the
where
game.
It grinds to a halt.
I know who it is.
Just
oh, he knows. Quicker. He knows. So that adds some pressure to the situation.
Yes.
Rick Porcello.
Rick Porcello is not correct.
I didn't think he was.
I mean, he might have thrown 270 innings to get there.
He did throw a lot of innings last year.
70 innings.
It would not have taken him 270.
Jose Quintana.
Jose Quintana is incorrect as well.
Somebody with a ton of innings. A ton of innings. 200 strikeouts in the AL. I am going to go with the only one I can go with.
Yep, there's only one good answer.
And his name is Ian Kennedy.
Ian Kennedy is incorrect. He had 184 strikeouts. Rick Porcello had 189. Those were good answers if you were looking for a guy with a lot of innings.
It was Michael Pineda.
Michael Pineda is correct. Only
175
innings.
Yeah. I know that because him and Robbie Ray both had 200-plus strikeouts because they were the same exact pitcher last year.
Michael Pineda doing a familiar thing this spring, which is dominating.
We're going to talk about him a lot more later in the show.
Okay, all right. I won't spill it all now then.
Sleepers 2.0. So we've got a tie game. We're going to the late innings. We're going to relievers.
Uh-oh.
There are seven answers on the board.
Wow.
Seven relievers last year had 40 saves. Chris Towers is in.
Juris Familia.
Juris Familia was the number one answer on the board. Pass or play?
Scott takes too long to guess.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to.
He's
so
wearing you down. He's wearing you down.
Kenley Jansen.
Kenley Jansen is correct.
Zach Britton.
Zach Britton is correct.
Mark Melanson.
Mark Melanson is correct. Just two names left.
Roberto Ozuna.
Incorrect.
Ah. Things get tricky from there.
Yeah,
things get tricky from
stall.
There.
Who's going to stall now?
Chapman didn't do it, right?
Was that a guess?
Yes.
That is incorrect. He had 36 saves. Same as Roberto Osuna. You have one strike left on the board.
AJ Ramos got there.
AJ Ramos had exactly 40 saves.
So I need There's one more?
One name left on
I
the
know
board.
Who it is. I know who it is.
Scott knows who it is.
David Robertson.
David Robertson had 37
saves.
Francisco Rodriguez.
K-Rod. 44 Boo. Saves.
Boo.
I win.
Scott White wins the feud. I hope that made up for email gate. We're going to have some busts emails later in the show, but we'll start with our email of the day. Dear Joe, Brody, AJ, and Jalen. Joe, Brody, AJ, and Jalen. I'm going to give you their last names and see if that helps. Namath, Croyle, McCarron, and Hurd.
Alabama quarterbacks.
Alabama quarterbacks. Here's a hot take for you. Madison Bumgarner is going to be a bust. He's thrown so many innings the past 6 years. This feels like the year it catches up with him. If you draft him as your ace, you're going to end up disappointed. Derek from Grand Bay, Alabama, Roll Tide, P.S. Chris's hot takes are lukewarm at best. If you want real takes, follow me on Twitter. And no, I'm not going to read your handle out, Derek.
So this is spoken.
Clever, though.
Spoken like an Alabama quarterback. Just this sense of confidence.
Bravado.
Yes. No. Why now for Madison Bumgarner? I feel like Adam was saying this last year, maybe the year before too. It just seems arbitrary.
Well, 2 years ago, it was the playoffs and the fact that he threw like 250 innings.
He threw every inning for the Giants in the playoffs.
He's averaged 226 innings per year over the last six, if you include the playoffs. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
And you know, as we see sometimes with pitchers. Things tend to, like Clayton Kershaw last year is actually not a bad example of this. He was still great, but things tend to catch up to them, and minor injuries can turn into major ones. And this is a big part of why I just don't feel comfortable investing a lot of draft stock into starting pitchers, is because they wear down. Like it's one of the immutable laws of nature, is that eventually every starting pitcher will get hurt.
Okay.
And so it's just, if you've made it through six seasons, that means you are less likely to get hurt than someone else. But
right. There's two different camps of thought, and you can go find evidence for both. And one is that the greatest predictor of future injury is past injury. Mm-hmm. So if the guy's struggled with injuries in the past, he's more likely to get hurt. And the other is, if you've thrown a ton of innings, you're more likely to get hurt. Listen, everybody's going to get hurt at some point, but you could be right, Derek. But it's not because you were right.
Yeah, I don't think he's. I don't think Madison Bumgarner would be a smart person to pick as a bust. But I won't be drafting him
because you don't take any pitchers that early,
right? But because of the inherent risk that comes with that kind of workload.
But he's your second pitcher, right?
I believe he's third still.
Okay,
I have Scherzer,
so you got Scherzer ahead of him. Yeah.
Let's move on to the news and the notes. Some of these things don't matter, but Josh Donaldson will make his Grapefruit League debut today. We had, at least Scott and I, had dropped him a little bit in our rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to leave him where you dropped him to?
Yeah, I mean, it was such a thin line between him and Bryant anyway for the second, third base spot that I don't see reason to change it.
Jerrod Dyson has leg fatigue. His legs are probably as important to him as any
player. Yeah, that's not a great sign for someone who's only skill is his legs, really.
He's used them a lot this spring,
yep.
So maybe they deserve to be fatigued. And,
right.
and that is a good sign. I remember last year, Heath, you made the prediction Jerrod Dyson will be Billy Hamilton 20
right.
rounds later or something. Well, that might actually be true this year.
I was just a year early, ahead of my time. Corey Seager needs two more full workouts before returning to game action, but things sound pretty positive with him. Speaking of positive, Yoan Moncada is on fire. Ever since I wrote that he was having a bad spring, he has, what, like four home runs since then, had two doubles and a dong on Sunday.
Three home runs.
I think he had a two-homer game the day after.
Yeah. Last four games, he's 7-for-11 with three home runs. So his spring line suddenly went, it looks very
and
good.
I think the White Sox have an opening at DH, so the errors might not be a problem. The Tigers are awaiting a second opinion on J.D. Martinez's foot. The x-ray came back okay. They said he had a sprained foot, and it didn't seem like a big deal, but then he got an MRI. Brad Ausmus says they have the MRI results, but they're waiting on a second opinion.
Yeah, so, I mean, Unless you're drafting today, you'll probably have more information before you have to make a decision. But a midfoot sprain doesn't sound good to me.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like several weeks and DL stint to begin the year. So I will downgrade him. It's just not clear how much yet.
Can somebody please get Lance McCullers some new shoes? I was worried he left his start with a foot injury, and I'm like, what's going on? He had a skin irritation because dragging his foot, he wore a hole in his shoe, and then he wore a hole in his toe, and it was bleeding.
I just feel like major leaguers have access to better equipment than that.
I want him to come out with some steel-toed shoes.
That would be pretty awesome.
That would be very cool. Because obviously he dragged...
It would be very Texas.
Yes. That would be very Lance McCullers. Drew Pomerantz left his start with tightness in his tricep. Cody Anderson will have Tommy John surgery. Not good news for either of those guys. Michael Brantley going to play in a real baseball game today.
All right.
I will move him up in my rankings once again. Jason Kipnis sidelined another 4 to 5 weeks. So they get some good news and some bad news. I am really trying to find a position where I'm okay drafting Jason Kipnis.
Are you going to slide them past each other at some point in your rankings?
That had already happened.
Okay.
The big drop at second base is between like the Zobrist Pedroia and then you get Devin Travis and Logan Forsythe and Jonathan Scope. Those, you know, before Travis
right
there.
So, I had put Kipnis in that gap.
Yeah.
I kind of think I'd rather Travis seems to be progressing and may be ready for opening day.
Right, but he's not as good as Kipnis. At least not that
he
we've seen so
year
far.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'd probably rather draft Travis than Kipnis right now.
I don't know that I'm there, but because you're probably talking at a bench player. You're 14 players deep into second base.
Well, in a roto
like that
league, you're talking a middle infielder.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I don't know that I drop him that far, but I get it.
Jung Ho Kang still does not have a work visa. That's not good. He seems more than likely that he will start the season on the restricted list.
Yeah.
And maybe extended spring training or something. Martin Prado will not be ready for opening day. Grade 1 hamstring strain. More Derek Dietrich time?
Derek Dietrich can be a useful fill-in option for the first week or two of the season.
We are going to get to Scott's sleepers and your busts in just a moment, but first, do these pitching performances matter? Lance Lynn continues to pitch exceptionally well, 5 scoreless innings over the weekend. Are you guys getting on the Lance Lynn train with me yet?
I like that. He might be the most heavily worked pitcher this spring, coming off Tommy John surgery, and he's had a long time to recover from it. So it's a good indication they're not going to restrict his innings. I think he's a free agent in the offseason.
Right.
So, but I still have the question, and this was before he even got Tommy John surgery. I ask this question every year: How good is he really? He's not a strikeout per inning type. He's not far off.
Right.
He's a high whip guy. He's this spring, 7 strikeouts in 14 innings for as well as he's pitched, so it's not like he's been missing a lot of bats. I feel like the upside for him is, I don't know, kind of in that Matt Shoemaker, Ian Kennedy range of pitchers. I don't know that he's, even if he stays healthy, he's going to be top. He's somebody I'd rank in the top 50.
He is currently being drafted as the 79th. Starting pitcher off the board, just inside of the top 300, it looks like. First off, I think that's huge value. I see him as a guy that, like, the upside you gave, I think that's maybe a little bit low. That's more, the Ian Kennedy is about what I would expect from Lance Lynn. I think he has upside as high as Jay Happ.
And who you don't like.
I don't like, but we see what Jay Happ did last year.
Sure.
I think he could be drafted in the same... You could expect him to give the same type of performance as Happ or Sanchez or something like that. So,
okay.
And he's being drafted...
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're
wrong. 100 spots later.
I guess the difference is... I mean, in Sanchez's case, I think he has upside beyond that. But it's a fair point. It's just there's so many pitchers in this year's pool, particularly... Where, I mean, the ceiling is so high. You know, you're talking about guys who get drafted late, like a Blake Snell or Robert Gazelman, or even like Eduardo Rodriguez, guys who are going really late, who I think just, can be so much better than that. Lynn's obviously safer.
Right.
Which sounds funny coming off Tommy John surgery, but he is. I mean, the way they're using him and all.
And he's proven that he can be the kind of guy that we're hoping those guys can be.
Yeah, Gesellman and Lynn are basically being drafted in the same round. So
I'd rather have Gesellman for the upside, unless it was a really deep league.
Scott, or Chris, Carlos Rodon, 4 scoreless innings in his Cactus League debut. This is another pitcher that I think is being drafted way too late, 48th overall, or 48th pitcher, 187th overall.
Yeah, the fact that, you know, we don't think he's going to be in the first turn of the rotation, but it doesn't sound like they are actually going to limit him all that much. I think that's a very good sign for Carlos Rodon.
Now, you like Kevin Gausman still considerably more than Rodon, or more than Rodon?
I think I probably have him a little higher, yeah.
He had a huge outing as well, struck out 8 Tigers over 5 scoreless innings. What's the upside for Kevin Gausman?
I think he has ace upside. Like, this was with Dylan Bundy throughout the last 6 or so years of the Orioles organization, the guy that was considered probably the second or third most talented player in the organization after Manny Machado. He was considered one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. Throws 96 miles an hour, has a devastating splitter. Sub-3 ERA last season in the second half.
The selective use of second half statistics will not stand.
Well, he did, and I do think he has that kind of upside. I just wonder if the arsenal is varied enough. He does have a curveball. He does have that third pitch. Is it good enough? Like, because even when his strikeouts are pretty good, he seems to be hittable. Like his hit per nine is high. And I don't think it's just a luck thing. So he gives up a lot of home runs.
Well, that's just going to come with the territory of where he pitches as well. Like, I don't think you can expect an Orioles pitcher, unless they're just elite, to have...
Look, I think his upside is a strikeout per inning, a low 3 ERA, and presumably a decent number of wins playing for that Orioles.
That was the weird thing last year, is he posted 179 innings and 30 starts of a 3.61 ERA and went 9-12. Chris Tillman really was worse than he was, and Chris Tillman won 16 games.
That's just dumb luck.
Random. Yeah. And it shows you why wins are a dumb category.
I mean, Gausman, the floor is pretty high, is what he's established the last 2 years. And then if he has upside beyond that, upside beyond Tillman, yeah, I would agree with that. It's just a range where he's going. Like, I'm more comfortable with Carlos Rodon or James Paxton. I feel like those guys have more upside.
I talked myself into James Paxton as a top 100 player last Friday. I moved him into my top 100, 90th overall.
You look really excited about that.
I was like buying the James Paxton like sleeper breakout hype, and then I actually looked into the numbers, and it's like, oh no, this guy could be like one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball.
Left-handed Noah Syndergaard.
He could be that.
I think he has that kind of potential. And
like, the curveball and cutter both played as plus pitches last season. He throws the 98-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He was, on Valentine's Day, I declared him the player I love for this year. We all know it was actually Mitch Haniger. I was just changing things up. But I'm...
So you're all like, on the Mariners.
I am not... I'm the highest on Gene Segura, too, right?
Yep.
I'm not getting James Paxton nearly enough. I don't think I have him in a single league yet for being the player I love and for being as high on him as I am. I always just seem to be a round late on him.
So if you are selected for the podcast league, just know that you need to go get James Paxton so Scott can't.
Yeah, Paxton.
Or Chris now. I have competition with Chris.
Might be my favorite of the like non-ace.
So ahead of Gausman and Bundy and Rodon.
I'm 22 spots higher on him than anybody else in the industry right now.
That seems foolish.
Nope.
Okay, maybe I need to do that so I can actually start drafting him.
That's a point. But that's a good point,
the third highest.
Right. That makes a lot of – or something we don't necessarily talk about is sometimes you have to go get your guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do that with McCullers a lot.
So you do, especially if you're picking one pick before me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the pitchers who were not so good over the weekend. We'll start with Tony Watson, gave up 5 runs in 2/3 of an inning. Daniel Hudson has been fantastic. Do we start looking at Watson as one of the guys who does not have a firm grip on the closer job?
I haven't seen anything to suggest that, and performance alone would not lead me to think that.
I will say,
like, I don't think not, going into the season, but this could give him a shorter leash in April, couldn't it?
Not every manager thinks the same way, but a lot of managers are hesitant to rely on lefties as their closer. You have to be really, really good.
That's true.
I know after, I think, the first really ugly performance Watson had, Clint Hurdle gave him a strong vote of confidence, like, this was part of the reason we were willing to trade Melanson. I'm obviously paraphrasing here, because we felt like Tony Watson was a guy who had this kind of potential. So he talked like Watson wasn't just somebody who happened into the role, but who they specifically designated for the role. And I think that gives him a pretty long leash. But after he got it in the second half last year, he certainly had his struggles then too. So I don't know that it's a firm grip. Just, I mean, is Daniel Hudson really that good? Look at his numbers last year.
Okay, now, Danny Duffy leads the AL, the United States team, in strikeouts mm-hmm. in the World Baseball Classic. Has given up 9 base runners and 1 earned run in 8 innings pitched. He's won 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically carrying the United States to the championship, and Chris Towers is concerned about him.
His velocity is down significantly. Like, really significantly. He's averaging 93.4 miles per hour with his fastball. Last spring, it was like high 96 range. Now, he was relieving in spring last year, but even when he was a starter, he never had an outing with velocity as low as either of his 2 World Baseball Classic starts.
Now, his average velocity before this last start was 92. It was below 93.
It went up about a half a mile per hour.
The average did.
No, I believe he went from...
So he went from like 92.8 to 93.3 or something,
I think so.
Scott had... Is it still too early to worry about velocity?
If the organization is worried about the velocity, then I worry about the velocity, too.
He hasn't been with the organization, though.
Well, but they're obviously monitoring what's going on with him. I haven't seen any concern apart from the ones Chris is raising. And I think, you know, what makes it curious is Danny Duffy theoretically is actually in a competitive environment as opposed to just spring training. But I saw something Adam Conley was talking about this weekend that relates to this. You know, he's had kind of a bumpy spring.
Oh, he got bombed this weekend, yes.
He was throwing like 96 for a lot of last spring, most of last season. And this spring he's been clocked in the 88 to 92 mile per hour range. But he says it's entirely intentional. He wore down last season and is trying to save his stuff for the innings that actually matter. Danny Duffy wore down last season, too.
I guess the thing for me is that as his velocity went down last season, his effectiveness did, too. You can see there's a pretty direct correlation between that, and so that's why I'm concerned. I'm not saying I'm panicking. I'm not saying I'm not going to draft Danny Duffy.
Have you lowered him at all in your rankings?
No.
Okay.
But it's just, it's something worth noting, especially because it's not just the typical. You would expect pitchers to be maybe a mile per hour down in the spring, and then they gain it back as the season goes on. He's down 3 to 4 miles per hour from his peak.
Okay, so from the number one SPARP to the number two SPARP, Scott, Dylan Bundy gave up 3 runs, struck out 1 over 4 innings, really struggled with his control. He's basically now had, what, 2 good starts, 2 bad starts.
Yeah, right after I bought into him, too.
But we got really excited about Dylan Bundy.
Yeah.
As maybe more than just a SPARP that can serve as your number two reliever.
And I don't know that this, like, if these were the starts he was putting up when I was writing Breakouts 2.0, I don't know if he would have made it in Breakouts 2.0 for me, but I don't know that it really matters either. I mean, obviously the bigger consideration for Duffy, for Bundy, is that the cutter that made him such a dominant prospect in the first place, he's using it again. And that's why we got excited about him. It helped that the results backed it up at the time. But like he's probably working through other stuff right now. I mean,
and if you bring back the cutter and you have success with it, and it was your best pitch before and now you're having success with it, that makes sense to get excited about it. If you say you're bringing back this cutter that you were really good with 2 or 3 years ago, and then you're not really performing well, and you get a 7 ERA in spring training. I don't know.
But it's not like his goal right now is getting ready for the season. Not like he may not be sequencing it the same way he would if he was genuinely pitching.
So no concern at all from anybody on Dylan Bundy.
I'll move him down a little bit. But I'm not the price to draft him. Like,
right, he's cheap.
I've been the highest. I'm still the highest in America on him, and it's only like one. And it's only 1 second. So right. Like,
it's spring training too. That's what, like, most of the time we ignore spring training numbers. Rightfully, there are instances where it matter. I'm just not sure.
And he doesn't. He doesn't have the type of track record where you can totally ignore spring training
numbers. But I don't know that the last two outings supersedes the discovery we made, more so than the performance, but the discovery of him reintroducing this pitch to his arsenal. I mean, there are a lot of national writers excited about Bundy's potential too this
and we've
year.
Heard rave reviews from players in the Orioles camp as well about the pitch.
Teammates like certain player a lot. Let's move away from the snark and into Scott. On Friday, Chris and I, without
Heath
here,
still in the room,
talked about your 2.0 busts and breakouts list.
Oh, did you rip it to shreds?
They were much shorter. Like, I'm not sure if you had as many players on those two lists combined as you have on Sleepers 2.0.
I did not. I had 7 combined. I mean, they're all 15 deep. All 3 of the articles go 15 deep. It's just some of them are carryovers from 1.0. Sleepers was the one.
You put
yes,
a little more
effort
into this.
I had more changes in Sleepers 2.0 than breakouts and busts combined.
Now, the first 3 guys we're going to talk about feels like Adam would like to play the Fooled You music, because they have done that to us over and over and over again. Taiwan yep. Walker, Michael Pineda, Yasiel Puig. Why is this the year for any of these guys?
In the case of Walker and Pineda, Walker especially, it seems crystal clear he's introducing a much-needed third pitch to his arsenal, a slider. He's used it like a third of the time this spring.
Yep.
He's had back-to-back 8 strikeout efforts in only 4 innings.
He's got 21 strikeouts to 1 walk, I think, in the spring?
Yeah, and he's sorely needed it. I mean, the stuff was always great, but he was basically fastball splitter.
But okay, we could remove the slider from this conversation
mm-hmm.
and just rewind to the 2015 podcast and have this same discussion about Taiwan Walker.
No,
and
probably the discussion centers around the third pitch.
Centers on the third pitch. Okay, so Michael Pineda, what's he doing differently?
Not as clear, because we don't have as much pitch effects data for him. But he also seems to be making a concerted effort to use his changeup more, and is dominant springs are normal for him. His last time, though, he extended himself to 5 innings. I think they were hitless innings. They may have been perfect innings. 8 strikeouts.
I believe he was part of the combined no-hitter that the Yankees threw the other day, wasn't he?
I think that was Tanaka, actually, okay. Who's also had a great spring, but we kind of know what we're getting with him. Pineda, both after that start, both Gary Sanchez, who was caught him, and Joe Girardi,
who managed him,
yeah, they both applauded his changeup use in that start, and he only threw his changeup like 7% of the time last year. So I mean, if that's all he was using in that start, I don't think they would be bringing it up.
For me, I just look at with Michael Pineda, it's the same argument as Robbie Ray. I said they were the same player, and it's just, if you can strike out that many guys.
Yeah, 200 and what, 170 innings.
Like, if you can do that, you only need small tweaks. Like, his peripherals are all good. Now, he's been a guy who has underperformed his peripherals for 2 years in a row.
Because he had 2 pitches, I felt like.
I think it was
too predictable.
I think there can be, you know, one of the places where the peripherals can fail is when you have, bad cluster luck, when you tend to, a lot of your hits come together at the same time.
That sounded strange.
Cluster luck, it's a thing.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. It's when your hits come together at inopportune times, which isn't necessarily all bad luck. It can be a sequencing issue. It can be the fact that you don't pitch as well with runners on base. But a third pitch can help mitigate some of those issues.
Would you say that Adam Azer had bad cluster luck with Emailgate? Because if the emails would have been spread out a little bit, people
probably
wouldn't have noticed
yeah.
as much. Okay. moving on to Yasiel Puig. I know, Chris, I'm going to let you start on this guy. It's Scott's sleeper, but, I mean, really, he stole him from you. Yasiel Puig has been a man after your heart since.
He was in my sleepers column
last year. And this year.
Okay,
and this year.
All right, fine. I feel like I'm drafting him just as often as you are, which isn't true.
Fight over Yasiel Puig.
Well, for me, the big thing is, like, he had this terrible season last year, and it wasn't a good one. He still had a 740 OPS. Like, that. Yeah. He was still a useful. It's not good for fantasy, but it still tells you that we probably overstate how bad he was.
It's not bad for fantasy, considering he's being drafted like a fourth or fifth outfielder, yeah. As long as he keeps the job and just is as bad as he was last year. I mean, that's fine. And obviously, the upside is much higher.
And
I didn't mean to interrupt.
He needs to have a 740 OPS in more than 360.
Right,
plays.
That's the bigger issue. But over the last two seasons, he has about a full season's worth of plate appearances between the injuries and the weird benching last year. 22 homers, 8 stolen bases, .260 batting average, 83 RBI, 75 runs. That seems
over 183 games.
But the plate appearances are more. I'm not saying that that's like just pencil him in for that over a full season, but like I think there's overreacting to him.
I kind of get what you're saying, but in terms of the actual performance when he's on the field, I don't think I disagree with either of you.
Like, he's going 206th overall.
The fact that he's played more than 104 games once in his career, that's concerning.
Well,
he got signed and called up late, he would have played more than that.
And there was an injury-plagued year, I think, once in there. But then last year was obviously the Dodgers didn't want him in the lineup that much. And that speaks to the improvement I feel like he can make. He already did make after a stint in the minor leagues, got called up in September. Very good month. It was mostly against left-handers, but he also made a change to his stance. He had always had a very close stance. He opened it up, just made more of an effort to see the ball better. And he's had a quality spring. The batting average isn't very good, but a lot of extra base hits.
Just crushing.
You know, he gets 3 hits one day. Suddenly the batting average is fixed. That's the way that works.
He's getting and he's being drafted in the Eric Thames, Nomar Mazara range.
I feel like Puig, and I know Chris isn't going to like this, but I feel like a lot of it is mental. A lot of it is his. He was obviously so good from the get-go that there's been a reluctance from him to adjust when every player needs to adjust. And this change in stance, I think, is a good indication that he's starting to get it.
When we talk about him being underdrafted, we have to factor in a player's floor and a player's ceiling, and everybody's floor is getting hurt on opening day and not playing again. Mm-hmm. But reasonable floor. He has a reasonable floor of you're dropping him in May.
Round 20, though.
Right. But how much earlier can you draft a guy with a floor that low?
I mean, do we not think the same could be said of Ender Inciarte or Carlos Gomez?
Of course.
Yeah. Or Hunter Pence.
Of course.
Right.
Or Keon Broxton.
Yes.
Or Randall Grichuk. Or Ender Inciarte.
Those guys weren't in the sleeper.
Or Jay Bruce.
But, sleepers aren't guys I'm reaching for, generally speaking. I want to get them just barely ahead of everybody else.
What you're saying with that list is that, yes, he's
Those guys are all being drafted ahead of him, though.
But in the same range.
If the downside is you drop him in May, well, yeah, when you're picking in the 200 range, there's a pretty good chance you're going to drop whoever you draft there anyway.
I don't think he's a bad pick in the 200 range. I was arguing against he deserves to be drafted much earlier.
Okay. But who's a player like drafted in the 12-13 round range who we don't necessarily think of a sleeper? That's just where he's supposed to go.
I mean, Brad Miller is currently being drafted 158.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. That's not happening on season.
Elvis Andrus, it's 182.
I mean, if Brad Miller is hitting like 180 with 2 home runs in April, you're dropping him too.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'd much rather have Puig than Brad Miller.
Marcelo Ozuna, I think you could say the same thing.
No, Marcelo Ozuna's floor is higher.
In a three outfielder league, if Marcelo Ozuna has a bad April, he's absolutely getting dropped.
Well, in a three outfielder league, we're not even drafting Puig, are we?
We are, for the upside,
bench. Yeah. Adam Duvall's going in the 12th round. That's another guy who...
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the rest of Scott's list. But I don't necessarily disagree with Puig. I just don't know that he's being that underdrafted. Greg Bird, Cam Bedrosian, two guys that have either had really good springs or things have happened well to them. So they've moved into your sleeper column. What's the upside for Greg Bird? 30 homers?
In Yankee Stadium as a left-handed hitter, I think that could happen. Yeah, that's certainly conceivable.
He
obviously needs the playing time, but that's kind of what's changed things and what got him added in 2.0 is You know, the Yankees signed Chris Carter. Maybe as more of an insurance policy, but he was the NL home run leader. Greg Bird bats left-handed, so you think a platoon situation seems like it's in the making there. But Greg Bird has had maybe the most impressive spring of any hitter. Obviously put to rest concerns over his shoulder. And over his shoulder. Joe Girardi has said that he's open to the possibility of playing against left-handers. So if he's an everyday player at Yankee Stadium, a guy who walked 100 times once in the minor leagues, it's not like he's some all-or-nothing hitter, I think he could absolutely threaten to enter that top 12 first base discussion.
I agree completely. And the reason I've had problems viewing the concerns about his playing time as legitimate is you look at the Yankees that they're going to rely on playing on a semi-regular basis, and it's Jacoby Ellsbury, it's Brett Gardner, it's Matt Holliday. Those guys are like 115 years old combined.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is getting hurt, like probably before the All-Star break.
Okay.
They're not going to have a problem finding at bats. They put Aaron Judge out in the outfield. They have to play Matt Holliday in the outfield. They could play Greg Bird and Chris Carter both.
Yeah.
One at first base and one at DH.
Oh, so you're saying, maybe I misunderstood. I'm not as concerned about the playing time,
especially once one of those guys gets hurt.
Here's the thing to consider also. I mean, Chris Carter is the epitome of streaky. Like, the Astros, when they got to a point where they could contend, they just weren't willing to tolerate it anymore. Those 2-month-long stretches where he's providing absolutely nothing. In the lesser half of a platoon, how is that going to work out? I just don't think it can last. He won't get the repetition to ever get hot.
Chris, are we feeling confident that Cam Bedrosian is the actual closer? I mean, we all feel like he should be the closer.
Houston Street's still not pitching. Andrew Bailey's still not good. So, yeah, I mean, I'm actually less convinced that Cam Bedrosian is really good than I am that he's the closer. I think he's pretty clearly the closer. He was amazing last year.
Right.
He was a disaster the previous two seasons in about as much playing time.
He didn't have a breaking ball. That started last year. If you're just a fastball pitcher, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
He was a former first-round pick as a reliever, so he was thought to have a lot of upside.
I mean, I don't feel like Bedrosian could make the leap like we're expecting the Edwin Diaz, Ken Giles, Kelvin Herrera type leaps. I don't feel like the 1.12 ERA from last year was legit. But
if he's 11.3 strikeouts per nine,
he could still
and
be
the control was much improved.
Very good number two reliever. And he is available at the end of most drafts.
I'm drafting him as if he's the closer now because I just don't see what other choice the Angels had. They already gave him that job last year before he had the blood clot in his arm, so it's not like they're reluctant to do it.
I was looking at this list, Scott, and the first three names, okay. The next two, fine. The last three, just total shock. So Francisco Liriano, Brandon Drury, and Austin Hedges. I'll take it away. Take that back. Austin Hedges, there's no shock at all. He's a young guy that used to be a top prospect, and he's
changed the
had
swing.
A lot of success.
Yeah, monstrous season at AAA.
Right. So Austin Hedges, I'll totally buy into that.
I actually don't understand your skepticism about Liriano.
Why wouldn't anyone be skeptical about Liriano?
He had a bad 21 starts with the Pirates, but he was... Upon getting to Toronto, he was the same guy he's been for the previous three seasons. Tons of strikeouts. Actually had somewhat improved control, but I'm not necessarily buying that. But we've seen he doesn't have to have great control to be really good, and he's looked really, really good in the spring too.
Yeah, the storyline was basically Pete Walker helped him regain his release point. I guess Ray Searidge was focused on other things.
Ray Searidge had a lot of work last year. You know, he had to work with
Tyone. I mean, Pete Walker is becoming an interesting guy. The way he's kind of unconventionally made Marco Estrada, and we got to see another year of it, but Jay Happ into quality pitchers. But anyway, getting back to Liriano, it's like he was so consistent those first 3 years with the Pirates in like a top 25, top 30 type pitcher in fantasy. Sometimes injuries prevent him from beating that, but that's how good he was. To me, it's like Chris Archer, but he's not getting credit for it. Like, Chris Archer had a similar...
He's not as good as Chris Archer.
But he's really good. He's not as good as Chris Archer. Yeah, but, I mean, Chris Archer found his form basically final 2 or 3 months, and we just are all taking it for granted. Okay, he's back. But Liriano does it, and, like, nobody wants him anymore. I don't quite understand it. I think the stuff was never diminished.
Undrafted. Yeah.
The stuff was never diminished. The strikeout rate never diminished. He just got hit a lot harder because, I guess, hitters could see what was coming because of the relief point.
Well, he's going to walk four batters. He's going to walk basically a batter every other inning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not generally the type of pitcher that you are targeting.
Such a good bat misser, though, and such a low hit guy.
Yeah, he is. He is a low, or has been a low hit guy. I get worried with a guy that he's now 33 years old. He lost it for a majority of last year, and he's walking a razor thin tight wire with his control issues.
Yep, I definitely would not draft Francisco Liriano as like my number two starting pitcher.
Have you drafted
Francisco Liriano yet this year?
That's the thing too. Like most mixed leagues, he's beyond the threshold where you have to even draft him. So there's nothing to worry about with him. It's completely risk free.
Okay, but you're not drafting him.
Maybe with my last pick.
Yeah, he's in the group of guys who has the potential to pitch like a high upside pitcher with no cost.
Mm-hmm. But unconventionally. Because he's 33 or whatever. So nobody thinks of him in that way.
You're taking Robbie Ray, right?
Yes. Like
you're drafting Robbie Ray. Yes. Robbie Ray was just as bad as Francisco Liriano last year and doesn't have the track record.
He's not 33 years old, though.
Okay.
If Liriano's struggles were in part because his velocity was down in some meaningful way.
And his velocity actually jumped way up when he got to Toronto, which is interesting.
Part of that may be because some of those appearances were in relief. I don't know. But yeah. It wasn't really down is the thing. Like, that had nothing to do with why he fell off. So I'm not even really attributing the age to it.
The swinging strike rate went back up. He started getting swings outside of the strike zone more often.
But aren't you the guy that always tells me full season statistics are generally more predictive?
Sure. And 3 or 4 years are more predictive than one season.
Okay. So
there's one. I mean, my thing with Liriano is there's one outlier with him.
Well,
and it's the 21 starts with the Pirates last year. If he was going 150th, there would be a ton of risk in drafting Francisco Liriano.
There is one outlier over the last 4 years.
Yes.
He had a half a decade as a starting pitcher before that where he was just awful.
No. He had 2011, 2012 where he was bad.
2009, he had a 5.80 ERA.
Okay. Before he hooked up with Searidge, he was kind of a mess.
Okay.
That's fair to say.
Finally, we haven't talked about Brandon Drury at all. I don't know. Do you have an impassioned speech to give about Brandon Drury?
I just think he's underappreciated, undervalued. He looks like he's the Diamondbacks' everyday second baseman. That's the only position he's played this spring. And just translate those numbers out, and he's something like
20-70-70.
Yeah, which I'm trying to think of what the comp I used was at Jonathan Scope, maybe.
Yeah.
Somebody even better than that. But I think based on the way he performed when he got more consistent at bats, which was early in the season and late in the season, I could see him even being something like a poor man's Justin Turner, but with triple eligibility. Once he gains second base, he'll also be eligible at third base in the outfield. And he's another guy who's just not getting drafted at all. So, you know, as my corner infielder in a roto league or whatever, I think he's not a bad pick.
I don't have any problems with Brandon Drury.
Especially at CBS. He's 291 right now. He's a little higher at the rest of the industry, but he looks like a value here.
He's not 33 years old. I'm good with it. Let's move on to some people have emailed us their busts, as Adam requested. We'll be doing this all week, so send us more busts. Steven in Illinois. Dear Ted, Barney, and Marshall.
I know that one.
How I Met Your Mother.
Yes. He gives us three busts. My busts for today are Michael Fulmer, John Lackey, and Dexter Fowler. Fulmer and Lackey will both have ERAs of 4.5 or higher.
Whew.
Fulmer will prove he is overrated. Lackey will officially begin to decline. Furthermore, Daniel Norris will outperform Fulmer. Additionally, we get an additionally and a furthermore, Dexter Fowler will be exposed, having a Hayward-esque pitfall. And end up being dropped to the 6th or 7th in the batting order, leaving Cardinals regretting their unusual decision to sign a player to a long-term contract.
Steven from Illinois, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I like if you're going to call Fowler a bust, I think the health would be the reason, right? Not just he's
yeah,
going
he's
to
been, he's
be
been
terrible.
He's been a solid on base percentage guy for a while. I'd be.
It's by far my least favorite of the three choices for bust. John Lackey is the best choice.
Is Lackey on your bust list?
John, I have not completed bust 2.0. I was that will be coming this week. Huh. Maybe we'll even talk about my list on the show. We'll see.
Probably not.
You're so lucky.
Well, we talked about yours. 38 years old, though.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he and all of the Cubs pitchers benefited greatly from the Cubs' elite defense in 2016.
It's going to be the same cast.
It's going to be the same guys, but it won't be, like, the Cubs' defense was... Maybe the best ever.
But Lackey was good the year before, too. The way he got better was basically strikeout rate, which is obviously independent of defense. I don't know if he can maintain that or not, but it's certainly interesting at his age. My thing about Lackey is he pitches deep into games for the Cubs. So, like, wins are inevitable. And wins are always valuable in fantasy.
Yeah.
I like Lackey. Fulmer actually is on my bust list.
Right.
And I think... I'm not sure what the difference is between him and like Jameson Taillon, except I guess he was up longer and he throws
like,
a little bit harder.
No, it's just like Danny Duffy. He had that stretch where his numbers were just amazing, and everyone. I feel like both of them, and Duffy slid back just a little bit, but both of them at the beginning of the spring were being ranked more like that stretch than their full season numbers.
I mean, Duffy's full season strikeout rate was very good. Fulmer's was not. And in the second half, it was like,
Duffy's was better than Fulmer.
It was like 6.6 per nine or something. And he throws really hard. He developed the third pitch last year, changeup, which was supposed to be a game changer. I'm just not sure it's enough. I don't think he's going to be bad. I don't know that I predict a 450 ERA for him, but he's going to be pretty average, I think.
That is, for me, the big thing is that if his skills don't improve, he's likely to be a bust. But he's young enough, he throws hard enough, that I think there's room for his strikeout rate to improve pretty dramatically.
Let's just rank these three on the bustometer. 10 being they're definitely going to bust, 1 being there's no chance they're going to bust. I'll give Lackey a 7.
So Fulmer, we're going 0 to 10.
What's that?
0 to 10.
You want a 0? Okay. Fowler a 3 and Fulmer a 5.
I'll give Fulmer a 6, Lackey a 5, and Fowler a 3.
Okay.
I will go 5 for both of the pitchers and a 2 for Dexter Fowler.
So we have no bust concerns with Dexter Fowler. Dear Roadblock, Mainframe, Ripcord, and Sergeant Slaughter.
I mean, I know Sergeant Slaughter was a wrestling guy. Were the other guys?
They are all G.I. Joes. Aaron wanted to give me a chance to make up for my terrible mistake on Friday.
I never watched G.I. Joe.
I appreciate that. I think it was G.I. Joe where they do these commercials in between with the kids, and knowing is half the battle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sergeant Slaughter. That's actually the name I was trying to think
so
of.
So he was both a wrestler. There was a Sergeant Slaughter wrestler, and is it the same guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Same guy. It was kind of like The Rock. He was a TV star, and he was a
wrestler. And he's in Moana.
There you go.
Earlier this spring, when Colin McHugh was dealing with General Deadarm, I tried to make a joke about that on Twitter.
Yes.
And I think G.I. Joe was the angle I was looking for.
Okay.
Yeah.
My bust for the year, Trevor Story. He had a historic April. I always feel bad saying a historic, even though it's not wrong. To send his value skyrocketing. And despite an injury that can sap power, his consensus ranking is 38 overall, and he's drafted in the fourth round. Story wasn't a particularly well-regarded prospect, strikes out a third of the time, and had an unsustainable .382 BABIP at home. Trevor Story is the shortstop version of Adam Dunn. He may reach 30 homers, but with a .220 average. And if Colorado starts selling off its parts, Cargo and Blackman... he will lose his lineup protection and RBI run potential.
He meant part of that as an insult, shortstop version of Adam Dunn. Yeah, I don't think that's an insult. If he can actually be the shortstop version of Adam Dunn at Coors, he's not going to hit .220.
But he will be a disappointment as a 38th overall
pick. Yes, he is absolutely being overdrafted at 38 overall.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not going to rule out him exceeding 40 home runs this year. I think he'll be closer to 35 or maybe even 30. But, I mean, Coors Field, if he played anywhere else with his strikeout rate, I could get behind calling him a bust. But it's Coors Field, which builds in so much of a BABIP advantage. Like, it'd be really hard for him to hit less than 260, I think.
At Fantasy Pros, he's 35th.
I also want to mention, since he kind of included it in the reasoning here, Colorado's not selling off its parts. Colorado's going to be good this year.
We thought they were, but now everybody's hurt.
They're all coming back in mid-April, it sounds like.
Famous last words.
Yeah, Chris does not think that Ian Desmond's ever coming back, and he scoffs every time they mention him coming back.
But
in April.
Here's the other thing. Like,
Chris doesn't really think that.
These are the players who are hurt are mainly additions from last year's team. Like, I think there's enough room for improvement from the players who are already there. A full year of Trevor Story. John Gray is just looking dominant this spring. Like, the Rockies are going to be in the hunt, and they're going to get them back soon enough not to fall out.
Okay, bustometer on Trevor Story at number 35 overall.
That's the big thing. You have to put the context. I think Trevor Story will be very good, but I think there's like five or six there.
I'll go five.
That is not pricing in nearly enough of the really dramatic risk that he just falls apart.
I'm going to go three.
Three.
Yeah, I kind of want to go even lower than Fowler, actually, but two seems too low. So I'll go three.
And finally, hey, Luke, Jason, Emil, and Grayson.
Allen's.
What shirt am I wearing today, Chris?
USC Gamecocks.
Yes, that is. I believe those are all Duke starters from James in Kentucky. Okay. I believe he is trolling.
Sure.
And I like it. Or maybe he was a Duke fan.
This is one of those things that, like, because I don't really care about college basketball, I feel nothing towards Duke.
Yeah.
Like, I feel zero of the animosity. Like, I kind of think Grayson Allen seems like a
very nice person.
Yeah. But beyond that, I don't really. Like, Duke does not draw any. I feel no antipathy towards Christian Laettner.
You are one of the few people in America that has no feelings towards Duke.
Yeah,
they have a huge fan base.
Yeah, I feel nothing towards them.
Yes, most people feel disgust.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of Yankees fans out there.
Yeah, I'm not a college basketball fan either, so I can relate to Chris on this.
A lot of Cowboys fans out there, too.
Is Corey Seager a bust this season?
A lot of people rooting for the Warriors.
He has the worst speed of the other top five shortstops. Is probably in the worst lineup of the top five. His 25 homer power doesn't make him a huge standout. And his nagging injury doesn't really inspire confidence in his durability. I don't think Seager will be bad, but should he really be taking ahead of the other four? I don't see how he's a borderline first rounder.
Well, let me revisit why I rank him ahead of the top four, because in terms of fantasy production, he wasn't last year. Not all of them, anyway. He scored 72 runs in a playoff caliber lineup with an MVP caliber production. That's just not going to happen again, unless, of course, this injury sidelines him for a portion of the season. But
or the lineup's worse.
The lineup's worse, but I don't think it's going to be. The Dodgers are good.
Like who? What major addition did the Dodgers make to their lineup that would make you think they'd be considerably better than they were last year?
Yes, help week.
Yeah, and maybe Cody Bellinger at some point. But Yasmani Grandal's good. Justin Turner's good. Andrew Tolles, I don't think, is bad. Anyway, getting back to Corey
Seager. The
reason
I ask is because the Dodgers were 14th in runs last year. They were a league-average offense.
If you're putting up the kind of numbers Seager does, though, you don't score 72 runs. You just don't.
I mean, maybe he's the
leadoff hitter, but he's not.
The big thing for me is...
I think it's RBI. I'm referring to the wrong number, but they're
yeah, he had 72 RBI. This is a little oversimplified, and I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go for it. He's an elite hitter. Like, he has an elite hitting skill set.
He's
everything,
the Joe Flacco of shortstops.
Stop.
He's actually, he's Joey Votto without the walks.
Let him finish the terms of his undermine.
In terms of his skill set, if you look at the quality of the contact, he was an elite in hard contact rate. He rarely hit into infield fly balls. The line drive rate was special. He's one of those guys, it's overly simplified, but at some point you do just have to try to not oversimplify or overcomplicate things. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. I think there's less risk in his profile than with any of the other guys. I don't know if Xander Bogaerts is the power hitter he was last season. I still have questions to some extent about Francisco Lindor's ultimate upside. Trevor Story, the massive strikeout rate, the limited track record, not an elite prospect, doesn't have the pedigree. Correa, elite pedigree, pretty good track record, but was a significant step down from Corey Seager last season.
I think it's well said, and I'm glad you went there because it's kind of where I wanted to go. I just didn't want to hear from Heath about it, and I probably didn't know how to say it as well. On the subject of the injury, I keep coming back to the idea last year, the injury he had last spring sounded worse. He missed even longer with it. He was right there in the opening day lineup and nearly won NL MVP as a rookie, so there's a non-zero chance it'll affect him, but I'm really not that concerned about it.
I like Corey Seager a lot. I'm drafting him early in the second round, and I have no problem with it. I just do think it's interesting that he was not a better performer than some of these guys, and yet he had 687 plate appearances. Like, he needed every one of those plate appearances. Bustometer on Corey Seager as a borderline first-round pick.
So what makes him a bust? If he performs like a borderline second-round pick, is
was
he a bust?
Was Carlos Correa a bust last year?
Yes. But he was going even higher.
Yeah.
Carlos Correa was going like sixth overall last year.
So slightly worse than Carlos Correa's last year would be a bust.
Okay. In that case, I'll say four.
Three or four, just because he doesn't have a huge track record, but... yeah, I think he's a better hitter than Carlos Correa.
To be clear, Carlos Correa was 274, 361, 451 last year, 20 home runs, 96 RBI. I think that's I'm going to say a four. I think it's almost 50-50 that he could fall into that range.
There were more red flags about Carlos Correa's rookie season than Corey Seager.
Yes, I think Corey Seager also could be like a top five pick heading into 2018. I don't want to sound like I'm hating on Corey Seager.
Like he could be a perennial batting title guy too.
Is that how you calibrate your bustometer? A five means a 50-50 chance he busts? Because I may have been doing it
probably
wrong
pretty
in that
smart.
Case.
Thank you, Chris. That's a great way to end the show. Chris just called me smart. Adam's coming back tomorrow. Sorry again for Emailgate, but it wasn't really my fault. Blame Adam.